This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large for Sunday, the first day of July 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF comes from the CICA Summer Music Festival, continuing this afternoon with the students' chamber music and solo recital at the Eureka Springs Odd. Today's performance begins at 4:30 p.m. More information is available at cicamusicfestival.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a local religious leader's reaction to the Supreme Court's ruling this week on Arizona's immigration law. There's plenty of road construction in the listening area, bringing with it unique types of traffic control systems. Plus, the Music on the Mountain series continues at Mount Sequoia.
But first, the U.S. Supreme Court last week upheld the controversial individual insurance mandate under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act of 2010. Millions of uninsured Americans must now secure health insurance, either through Medicaid if they meet a low-income threshold, or individually through health insurance exchanges, a marketplace where consumers and employers may pick and choose a plan. Some states have chosen to operate their own exchange, while others will let the federal government operate it. And Arkansas, hedging that the nation's highest court would not strike down the mandate, is already way ahead in setting up a state-operated exchange. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
More than two dozen states claiming the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act individual insurance mandate was unconstitutional had their day in court yesterday and lost. But Arkansas was not among them, so compared to most states, is ahead of the curve. Arkansas Insurance Commissioner Jay Bradford.
Well, you know, we've been doing our planning process just as if the Supreme Court was going to hold it as constitutional. And because we didn't know which way it was going to go, nobody else did, but we felt like that we had to stay on a timetable to be able to deliver the services for Arkansans. So it just kind of confirms the work we've been doing for the last couple of years is, you know, was not in vain.
The new law requires all Americans by next summer who are without insurance to enroll in Medicaid if they qualify or purchase insurance, either through their workplace or individually through state-operated pools referred to as exchanges. Arkansas was one of only 14 states which opted early on to run its own health insurance exchange, initially funded by a $1 million federal startup grant. But opposition from the Arkansas General Assembly forced a different option, partnering with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, creating a hybrid federally facilitated health benefit exchange, infused last February by an additional $7.7 million implementation grant, placing the state even further ahead of the game.
Had we just waited around, we would have been so far beyond the timetable required by the federal government that we would have ceded all of this to the federal government. We would have lost the partnership parts, which to Arkansans is the consumer complaints, the Navigator program, which are counselors that help people decide which way to go. We would have lost the ability to approve the companies doing business in the state. That would have gone to the feds.
Under the hybrid model, Arkansas will have 80% more control in how the exchange works, Bradford said. Individual enrollees will have to provide personal information, including annual income. They'll be directed to a list of insurance providers to choose from. Insurance companies will compete for that business. Consumer complaints will be referred to a regional call center for resolution.
We will go through a process of education as part of this $7.7 million grant, which will inform the citizens that what's available to them, how to access exchange. There's a lot of ways to do it. You can do it. You can do it, obviously, on your laptop when it in 2014. There's going to be navigators, which are not commissioned salespeople, that are available to Arkansans to go over their options. There'll be decisions to be made. We'll do a PR campaign that will be to educate people of their rights and their options. And that's going to be a part of this $7.7 million funding. And by 2013, we're supposed to be ready, you know, to be capable of signing people up. It's not effective to 2014. So we've got a lot of work to do, but what I'm proud to say is that we have continued our planning, and so we're not behind in that.
And working poor who don't meet the Medicaid threshold will be privy to subsidies to help them pay for the cost of coverage.
They will receive subsidies in the form of tax credits. So you get a family of four, a man and wife, a couple of kids, making up $50,000 or $60,000 a year. They have no insurance. They're going to get some help on their taxes.
Those who qualify for Medicaid coverage will also be required to enroll.
The federal program has a Medicaid supplement designed for Arkansans up to 135% of poverty level, which is some of our least affluent citizens. Typically, someone who's making $20,000 a year with a couple of kids would be eligible for Medicaid. And it's scary numbers. It's probably $1 billion that's set aside over the next 4 years to take care of that segment of the population. So I'm just the commissioner of insurance, and what we do here is regulate insurance on behalf of the consumers. So that decision is going to be made by the governor and the legislature.
And what happens to those who refuse to sign up?
There's a penalty, and that's what the Supreme Court said. The penalty is a tax. It's very low in the front. They're going to get a charge on their tax bill of $95.
That penalty will increase with each passing year, but the more people who participate, the lower the rates will be. Arkansas Insurance Department Commissioner Jay Bradford says. As the hybrid exchange is rolled out, the Arkansas Insurance Department expects more than 500,000 Arkansans, including several hundred thousand new Medicaid recipients, to be enrolled by January 2014. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large. This week, the United States Supreme Court not only handed down the opinion on the Obama administration's health care law, but also decisions regarding mandatory life sentences without parole for juveniles and Arizona's immigration laws. Most of that state's immigration laws passed in the past few years were struck down. Just hours after that opinion was announced, a coalition of groups met in Springdale to discuss the opinion.
Hi, my name is Lowell Grisham.
Lowell Grisham, rector at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville, spoke at that press conference, and his comments are the latest in our ongoing In Their Own Words series.
And I want to start with some biblical mandates. There shall be for both you and the resident alien a single statute, a perpetual statute throughout your generations. You and the alien shall be alike before the Lord. That's from Numbers 15. And the alien who resides with you shall be to you as the citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. That comes from Leviticus. Jesus told us to love our neighbors as ourselves. And when a lawyer tried to narrow the field, who's my neighbor? Let's clarify that. Jesus told a story about a foreigner, an alien, the Good Samaritan, who was the hero of the story and who showed what it meant to be a neighbor, and that is to be compassionate to anyone in need. And the illustration was about a stranger. The Arizona statute was a law founded on fear and on prejudice. The Bible tells us 365 times, do not be afraid. Be not afraid. Fear not. We don't make good laws when we are afraid. Now, I'm a Bible believer. I'm a Christian, a follower of Jesus. And I agree with Roman Catholic Bishop Taylor and with the Arkansas Methodist who produced the wonderful documentary Gospel Without Boundaries. Our current immigration system is evil. It is broken. It is as immoral as the Jim Crow laws enforcing legal segregation during my childhood. It needs to be reformed. It needs to be changed. And that needs to be done at the national level, not done by states. And when I heard that the Arizona check your papers requirement was not struck down, I thought immediately of Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He lived under the evils of apartheid. He's an archbishop of my church. But if he didn't have his papers on him, he was subject to arrest and to detention. Requiring papers is what totalitarian states do. It's not the American way. What's to stop a racist sheriff from detaining a fifth-generation American who's a little browner than I am to ask, where are your papers? I think of Mary, Joseph, and Jesus, fleeing from Herod to Egypt. And I'm thankful that they were welcomed. They were given refuge and not sent back to danger and insecurity. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself, for you were aliens in Egypt.
Lowell Grisham speaking Monday in Springdale in support of a majority of the Supreme Court's decision striking down much of Arizona's immigration law package. Others had different opinions on that matter. Arkansas 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack issued a statement this week that says he's pleased the Supreme Court left intact what he calls the core provision of the Arizona law, allowing local law enforcement with reasonable suspicion to determine individuals' immigration status. Congressman Womack says he remains disappointed that states like Arizona continue to suffer under what he says is the nonfeasance of federal authorities on illegal immigration. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman issued a statement this week saying he was pleased the Supreme Court did leave provision 2B in place, saying the state of Arizona still has the ability to ascertain if a person is in the country legally, a matter the senator calls common sense. Senator Bozeman says the state of Arizona is taking steps to ensure the safety and well-being of its citizens. And this week, the high court also struck down mandatory life sentences without parole for juveniles. Arkansas is among the states with such a law in place. The group Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families applauded the decision, saying minors who commit crimes are more likely than adults to reform their behavior and succeed at rehabilitation. Paul Kelly, senior policy analyst for the group, says the ruling is a step in the right direction.
It upholds the moral and legal findings that children should be treated differently because of their limited capacities, and they also should be given a chance to be rehabilitated and are more likely to do so.
Kelly also says there are 68 people who were sentenced to life in prison without parole as juveniles in Arkansas. With the decision, those people will now be resentenced.
Next, Bird Scout Joe Neal takes us to a sun-drenched bayou on the Arkansas River Valley, which serves as a sort of pit stop for many thousands of migrating shorebirds.
These recordings are from Frog Bayou Wildlife Management Area along the Arkansas River near Dyer. There's a lot of sound in the background of these recordings. Gas wells, freeway traffic, military training across the river at Fort Chaffee, soybean farming, no matter. There are hundreds of excited sandpipers in a shallow pool, many stopping here briefly on their way between South America and the Arctic. This migration of thousands of years standing is like North America in 1650. It's like there's no busy Fort Smith, no artillery firing at Fort Chaffee, no truck-clogged I-40. Like Gaswell engines are not roaring in all directions. Like wild America and wild creatures own it all. American golden plovers are walking muddy edges. There are also greater and lesser yellowlegs, pectoral sandpipers, and upland sandpipers. And cliff swallows are collecting fresh mud to build their bottle-shaped nests. Bean farmers and gas companies claim extractable wealth here. I don't mean to ignore the practical, to behave like we don't all have to live in the real. But we don't have to limit our thinking to extractables. Golden plovers migrated here long before gas companies or bean farmers, including my own Neal ancestors in the 1820s. We can't turn back the clock, but we can sure stop for a minute or two and admire. The birds keep up an exciting caroling with background accompaniment of gas well engines roaring and boom, boom of artillery practice at Fort Chaffee across the river. They are on their way north.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas memoir, is published by Half Acre Press.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Benton County residents last voted on the legal sale of alcohol in that county in 1947. The matter could be on the ballot again this fall. Ozarks at Large's John Schlois has a report. It begins with Jennifer Sweet of the Rogers Historical Museum reading a newspaper article from 1947 detailing that vote.
An overwhelming majority of the people of Benton County are opposed to legalization of the manufacture and sale of alcoholic beverages, and those who like their little nip will have to depend upon Missouri and Washington County dealers for their supply for at least another 2 years. That fact was clearly demonstrated in Tuesday's local option election, initiated by wet forces after the county had been in the dry column for little more than 3 years. Nearly complete unofficial returns from over the county today show the Dries had won a major victory by a margin of 2,075 votes. The outcome of Tuesday's voting, for one thing, was the complete refutation of the argument heard recently that the county was voted dry in 1944 because veterans, then in service, had no opportunity to vote. A comparison of the results of Tuesday's voting with that of October 1944, when the county was voted dry by the slim margin of 90 votes, shows a sharp upswing of dry sentiment over the three-year period of drought.
It has been almost 65 years since Benton County residents have voted on the wet-dry issue, and a group, Keep Dollars in Benton County, aims to bring the issue back to voters this November. Marshall Nye, an attorney representing the group, said he thinks that they can get enough signatures to put the issue on the ballot.
Well, I certainly think it's achievable. I won't say that it's easily achievable because we have some interesting dynamics here. Number one is that we're required to get 38% of all registered voters.
According to the Benton County Clerk's Office, there were 108,305 registered voters in the county as of June 1. To achieve 38%, the Keep Dollars in Benton County campaign will have to get more than 41,000 signatures. The group has until August 8th to turn in their signatures. The Benton County Clerk's Office then has 10 days to certify the signatures before the measure can be placed on the November 6th ballot. Nye said the group has collected several thousand signatures already.
We're not publicly releasing the precise number, but we have in the past released a number, which was 35,000. I think we also publicly released our drive-up sign-up success, which was 800 additional signatures. So, you know, certainly I can tell you today that it's beyond 36,000 signatures.
The group plans to keep collecting signatures through the end of June. I asked Nye if he had heard of any opposition groups coming out against the measure.
The sheer numbers of people who have turned out to sign the petition, when you look at that on a percentage basis, I think it helps explain why we haven't seen an organized opposition, because I think people largely favor this.
It didn't take long for me to find one group that is against Benton County going wet. To be clear, the Keep Dollars in Benton County campaign has said their current mission is to get the issue on the ballot and let voters decide. They promote the issue based on a study from the University of Arkansas's Center for Business and Economic Research. That study, which was paid for by Keep Dollars in Benton County, estimated that the county residents would have spent nearly $78 million on alcohol sales in 2010 if the county was wet. The study estimated that would have amounted to about $780,000 in sales tax revenue for Benton County. The study's figures are based on the spending patterns of Benton County residents when they buy mixed drinks and wine at private clubs, because there's a tax on them. A private club license issued by the Alcohol Beverage Control allows restaurants to serve beer, wine, and mixed drinks. According to the ABC, there were 136 private club licenses in Benton County in early June. The spending at private clubs in Benton County is then compared to statewide spending at bars, restaurants, and private clubs. Three liquor stores in Washington County are currently allowed to sell alcohol to private clubs in Benton County.
The issue really is, where should the tax dollars go? And should we be paying our residents to drive to Washington County to make purchases at retail to pay tax there and then come back and mark it up and resell it in Benton County. And we don't think so. We think it makes more sense to have our money here.
Back to that opposition. I found it at the Global Outreach Center for Emmanuel Baptist Church in Rogers. Pastor Thomas Hatley said the church is about 1,500 members. Hatley said he researched the difference between wet and dry counties.
There's just no way that, John, we can look at the facts of what happens in Arkansas whenever a county goes wet and the changes that are made in that county, both economic as well as social, as well as crime and all that family destruction. You just can't ignore that and let something bad happen to your county. And so we just feel like we need to let folks know the truth and then let them decide from that.
Hatley said he's got bigger things to worry about than obsessing over political issues such as this one. The church has a large outreach program with several global missions. Hatley said he decided to do some research after being approached by his congregation.
When my people came to me and said, did you know there's a petition going around and they're trying to get this on the ballot and things of that nature, I decided I would do a little digging and find some people who had done some good research and be prepared to help my people.
Hatley claims that statistics from the Arkansas Crime Information Center shows wet counties have higher rates of murders, rapes, and robberies.
You know, I tell my ladies, isn't it great that we live in a county where there are no bars on the doors and windows of the convenience store, where you can go fill up your car at 11 o'clock at night as a woman and feel safe? There are counties touching us. You can't do that. You'd never send your wife to a convenience store where they sold liquor in an adjoining county to let your wife fill up with gas at midnight.
Are you talking about like Washington County?
Yeah, exactly.
Hatley said that a wet Benton County would be a very different county than residents know today.
If you love life and people and families more than you love money, you should vote this down.
If Keep Dollars in Benton County does get enough signatures by the August 8th deadline, the issue will appear on the November 6th ballot. For Ozarks at Large, I'm John Schlois.
I moved here from New Orleans. I found that town too. Store. I said, where do you keep your beer? They said, 40 miles from here.
This is the weekend edition of Ozarks Large. Good Sunday morning. Take the Sun, a few boxes that are geared up to be speakers and a creative mind. And you have Sun Boxes. It's an art installation that produces sound through solar panels. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talked with the creator earlier this week.
Those are the sounds created by Craig Colarusso's solar-powered sound installation known as Sunboxes. Craig, who recently moved to the area from Massachusetts, has showcased his installation across the country. The New Englander is working on allowing the sound installation to make music here in Northwest Arkansas, but the next stop for him will be Vermont. Throughout the month of July and the first weekend in August, Sunboxes will be installed in state parks across Vermont. But before heading north, Craig stopped by the studio earlier this week to discuss his latest project and his background as an artist.
My background's actually more in music. More accurately, I'm a recovering musician. I was in a lot of bands in the 90s, put out a lot of records, went on a lot of tours, and I loved it. I mean, I really did. I have an enormous ego. I like being on stage. But I really wanted to make something different. And so I think that... the music industry doesn't allow you to do too much, so I had to split.
You're a recovering musician, so how did you sort of segue into, art? Would you call this art? What would you call this?
I do. I fancy myself an artist, so I think what I make is art. That's a very tough question, because I would say it took 20 years to kind of get where I am. I think the start of it really is the physicality. I really wanted to make something that people could feel like they're part of. And I think that, I love being on tour and I love being on stage, but there is that barrier between audience and performer. And I think that works in certain situations, but not in all. So I was trying to do something else with it. So I think for me, my art pieces have all kind of taken that physicality into consideration.
So what is a sunbox? How would you describe this?
A sunbox is one of 20 at the moment. They have a solar panel on top, and inside is a PC board that has a sampler, an amplifier, and some software. And they're all programmed to play continuously as long as there's enough power.
How did you come up with the idea for this?
The short answer is in 2008, my good friend Sexy David Sanchez called me up and said, yo, make something solar. We're going to the desert. And he hung up. 2009, we had a residency out at this place called the Goldwell Open Air Museum where we made art using sustainable energy. And so Dave and this other guy, Richard Vossler, and myself all went out there and we made this thing called Off the Grid. And sunboxes was my contribution.
Very cool. And you decided to incorporate sound into your art because of your background as a musician?
Yeah. I mean, I think that my attraction to music, I think, comes from sound. And I haven't been able to really shake that yet. I like sounds. And I think that once I started to think about music outside of songs, the world became a bigger place. So I just kind of went with that.
So how difficult was it to design this? Because it sounds like there's a lot of technical pieces to this box.
There are. I have a lot of help. a good friend of mine made the boards. Another friend of mine helped me make the boxes. I bought all the solar panels, put them all together. There is a lot of stuff. But, you know, once again, it goes back to thinking about this for a long time that, you know, little incremental steps all the way. Then you wake up one day with 20 solar-powered speakers in your house.
Is there a certain reason for 20? Or
I wanted to do 100, but I didn't have the time or the money.
So start with 20. Work your way up.
Yeah. I think 20 is good. I've done a few photo shoots with, like, 8, and it doesn't feel right. 20 feels good.
Okay.
100 would feel amazing.
Well, we'll get there. So you kind of started with this off-the-grid thing, and then you guys have showed these at different places?
Yeah, I have an informal goal to bring sunboxes to every state. I personally have stepped foot on every continental state, and I've played or installed in 32 of them.
Wow.
We live in paradise, so I'm trying to see as much of it as I can.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so can you tell me a little bit about what this sound installation looks like when it goes to, like, you're going to Vermont, some state parks in Vermont in July. What is it? How is it set up? What does it look like? What do you look for? I mean, you have a whole state park. Where do you decide where you want to put these, or how do you position them?
I have three parameters as far as setting it up. The first one is I try and make I make it so that you're surrounded by the piece in several spots. The other thing is there's four notes and there's five of each of those. So I try not to put all the B flats together, so you get a full sense of the array. And then the third thing is ultimately it is a visual piece as well. So I just try and make it look like it makes sense in the space that I'm given.
So why B flat? Any specific reason?
I started with B flat because I wanted this to be sort of uplifting. And some of my other pieces are a little heavier. And I wanted this to be kind of light. I wanted this to feel like daytime music.
So these things, I guess, kick on when the sun comes up and go off when the sun goes down.
Right. And there's no batteries. So right. when the clouds come in, sometimes it gets a little quiet. Sometimes it turns off altogether. And that is beautiful because when they turn off altogether, inevitably the sun burns through and they all start at the same time. And it really is glorious.
So it essentially doesn't sound the same every time, even if you saw it at a different place because...
Absolutely. I mean, there's a few reasons for that. Number one, you know, the array is always... I can't recreate the footprint, so I don't even try. So everywhere I go, the arrangement of the boxes is different. And then... Let's say you come to a spot twice. It's doubtful that you'll walk through it the same way because you have so many options. Why would you? And then the thing I really like about sunboxes is that the sound is loud enough to engulf the participant, but at the same time, ambient sounds from the environment leak in. Like we did 10 days in Martha's Vineyard last year, and so the waves in the background was just beautiful.
I bet that would be gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, things like I had this great gig in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, and like this ambulance went by full blast. And so it was like this great kind of like sonic field of sunboxes with this siren moving through. It was just amazing.
So when you're setting these up in the different locations, do you rearrange them, I guess, for aesthetics as much as you do for sound?
I do. And another cool thing is I'm always chasing the sun. So as the sun moves, I do a dramatic sort of tilt. to Follow the Sun. And I just got back from – I did a great festival called Communique out in Boulder, Colorado. And on the last day, the way – you know, it's all different, but like the way the horizon was – as the sun was going down, it created this long, narrow path of sunlight. And so I just kept following the sun, and it was just easing back. And it was just amazing, you know, to watch the piece crawl from its original point back to, you know, slowly making its way back to the van.
So what is your role during one of these installations once you're there? If I go to Vermont where you've got this set up, I mean, do you spend the day there talking to people, or do you set it up and walk away?
Oh, no, I'm there. I'm there for a few things. I definitely watch the piece, and I do all the shifting and maneuvering. And also, I'm noticing that people like to talk, you know, and that's the difference. If you come to see – if you come to Sunboxes, you have my attention. I will give you as much energy or time as you require. And I think that that's sort of unique because I'm gathering from most of the people I talk to that they don't get to talk to artists, you know, and – I don't play the brooding artist type very well. You know, I'm just a thug from Connecticut. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I try and be available for people. I like to answer questions. I find myself in very interesting conversations with people. You know, the other thing about Sunboxes is that, you know, it's the most accessible piece I've ever done. So I'm getting more than just the normal music and art crowd.
People can interact with Sunboxes not only at an installation, but actually you have recordings. I saw that people could get through your website.
Yes.
Is it of different installations that you've had, or is it a specific site that you've been?
Well, this particular 7-inch has two recordings. One was done on a frozen pond in Plymouth, Massachusetts, which is kind of a really neat experience into itself.
Uh-huh.
And then the other side is a grassy field, also in Massachusetts, in September. I think my goal now is to record it in each of the seasons and release a double album because I love records. You know, I'm just an old punk rocker, so that ain't going away.
So it's actual vinyl. It's not a CD. It's not a...
No, it's actual vinyl. It's colored vinyl. There is a digital download code in there, so if you don't have a record player, that's cool. Yeah, I mean, the thing about the recordings is that it really does sound different everywhere it goes.
And then there's also an app for the iPhone?
There is an app. There is an app, yes.
And how does that work?
Well, basically, you can stream all the audio on one phone, or you can recruit 19 other people and recreate Sunboxes with 20 cell phones.
Seriously?
Scout's honor.
Very cool.
I think, for me, the app is definitely pushing my whole thought process in that direction. Because in the same sense that I wanted to make something that people could feel part of, I think this takes that idea to the next level. Now you have 20 people who are going to go out there, take this system, and do something with it. You know, that's what I like. That's what I want. I want my art. My art is not precious. It should not be behind bulletproof glass. It is for the masses to get out there. I'm giving you the tools to make something. Impress me.
Sunboxes, Craig Colarusso's solar-powered sound installation, will be on display in Vermont State Parks throughout July. More information is available at sun-boxes.com.
Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke with Craig Colarusso earlier this week.
Later today on This American Life, Jimmy Finkel wrote real estate stories that were published in newspapers in California and Florida, but nobody knew who he was.
So you don't know who Jimmy Finkel is?
I have no idea.
Yet you have edited a story with the byline of Jimmy Finkel. So who wrote it?
Probably. He was somebody thousands of miles away, hired to do the job from a desk in the Philippines. Switcheroos, later today.
This American Life with Ira Glass, beginning at 10 this morning, just after this edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Traveled on Futrell Drive in North Hills in Fayetteville recently, you may have noticed some construction at that four-way stop at the intersection of these roads with the Fulbright Expressway. Traditionally a European traffic control mechanism, roundabouts have been popping up in northwest Arkansas in recent years. The city of Fayetteville is following the lead of Bentonville and Rogers, which both have completed and working roundabouts on their roadways. I spoke with city engineers in both Fayetteville and Rogers, Here is my report. Chris Brown, city engineer with Fayetteville, says that as part of the 2006 highway bill, the city received about a $10 million federal earmark to make improvements to the Fulbright Expressway near the junction with Highway 71B.
To provide better access and better traffic flow in and around the expressway to help out with ingress and egress to get to the shopping area and to the medical park. And as we were studying, making decisions about how to best spend the $10 million was this particular four-way stop in this intersection.
He's referring to the four-way stop at the intersection of Futrell, North Hills, and the Fulbright Expressway. Based on the type of traffic there, they settled on a roundabout. There's a lot of traffic coming off of the highway, and a red light would cause stacking up on the highway due to the short distance between the highway and Futrell Drive. A roundabout is ideal because cars don't stop, ever. If you've traveled to England, or even just driven in Rogers, that city installed a roundabout in 2008. Then you've seen a roundabout. It's a large circle in the middle of the road, generally at an intersection of at least two roadways. In the 1950s, roundabouts were high speed and huge, hundreds of feet in diameter. The one this city is building is a modern roundabout.
What modern roundabouts are designed to be is slower speeds. The center circle is usually much smaller. Ours is about 90 feet in diameter, so it's a pretty tight circle. So they're designed to be slow speeds. You yield when you come to the roundabout, so there will be a yield sign at all the points where you enter, and you yield to the traffic in the circle. So they're a little bit different than those. They're really much safer than the older style roundabouts.
A modern roundabout is also safer than a traditional four-way intersection.
The reason is that all your turns, all your conflicts. At the roundabout, you're making right turns always, and you're not turning left to cross traffic. And so any accidents usually that you see in roundabouts will be side swipes or some kind of angle collision as opposed to a right angle, which you see more at typical intersections.
And everyone is moving in the same direction. Chris says there are other advantages over a red light. With a typical signal, you may be the only one on the road. But if you have a red light or a stop sign, you have to stop. With a roundabout, you don't.
And they handle traffic and keep it moving, so you don't have a lot of idling, stop and go, again, under any traffic scenario. Whether you're there during rush hour, whether you're there at midnight, you can usually flow through smoothly without having to stop and wait.
The city of Rogers installed one in 2008, near Champions Drive in the Pinnacle Hills Promenade exit of 540. Lance Jobe, city engineer with Rogers, says roundabouts are also useful in the event of a power outage. Traffic continues to flow. He says that they are also aesthetically pleasing. Landscaping can be done in the center of the circle. The city has plans to install other roundabouts at Montanay, the Sports Park, and Veterans Park. Lance describes the landscaping that will be placed at one of these locations.
Definitely the one on Veterans. It's going to have a very nice Veterans Memorial in it, where I believe we have our mobile artillery piece that will be placed in the center there, along with the names of Rogers veterans who've died in service, and it's going to be a very nice memorial in that one. The one at the Regional Sports Park will just have some nice landscaping and stuff like that, and they will look very nice, I think.
Back in Fayetteville, Chris Brown says that he has been asked why putting a circle in the road costs so much. His answer is that it's much more than just constructing the circle.
Because we're working on, we have to work on the ramps all the way up on the highway. We're widening Futrell all the way to Gregg. And, you know, then just constructing the roundabout and all the lane reconfigurations. It did, you know, it's about a $1.7 million construction project. But I think in looking at all of the things that it's doing and all the traffic movements that's going to help, it's really money well spent.
Construction began at the beginning of June and will continue for the next few months. Drivers can expect some deviations from what they're used to. Chris says that because the roundabout is a little bit south of the current intersection, the four-way stop remains intact. What they've done is to close the west side of North Hills, the southbound side, making the other side two-way traffic.
if you want to go south towards the hospital from Fulbright, you have to sort of jog over and use the east side of North Hills. That'll remain closed until we can get that half of the roundabout constructed. We'll then shift traffic, move them, run them through the roundabout, and build the other half. We end up having about five different phases of traffic control, so we'll have to move the traffic. As we build one phase, we move the traffic and shift it around. So I think everybody needs to be prepared for something different almost every time they go out there.
Around Wilson Park, there are some landscaped rotaries, though much smaller than what's being constructed to their north. According to Chris Brown, these aren't roundabouts at all.
We call them landscaped islands, circular landscaped islands. Their function really is for a traffic calming. It's kind of an alternative to a speed table.
He says that traffic calming measures can either be vertical deflection, something you go over, or horizontal, something you go around, thus slowing down traffic.
My opinion is that those are much less annoying than the speed tables can be.
Yeah, I like that way better.
Yeah, and if you can get people to slow down without really recognizing that that's what that function is, then to me that's the best of both worlds. You're slowing traffic down, but you're not really, in their face about it. So,
toward the end of the summer, another construction project is expected to begin as part of the highway bill. A flyover connecting 71B to the Fulbright Expressway, eliminating the need for a U-turn for northbound travelers at Joyce Boulevard, and making the Target and Walmart shopping centers easier to access. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm inside the Furman Gardner Performance Studio. I'm with Pat Hall and Pat Hall and Friends. And you're here because in just a couple of days you'll be at Mount Sequoia, correct?
Yes, we will. We'll be there on the 4th of July Eve, the 3rd of July, Tuesday. The first Tuesday of the month is Music on the Mountain at Mount Sequoia every first Tuesday of the month. And we're lucky enough to be the July show.
And with you in the studio?
John Stiers and Ezra Idlett, two of my very good friends and very good musician supporters who have encouraged and helped me along the way in my music career. And there'll be several other people with us the night of the performance from 7 to 9. Noah Menard will be playing lead guitar for a set, and Rod Williams will be playing lead guitar for a set, both fabulous lead guitar players. Andy Goodson is going to be playing bass and singing backup with me all night. And am I leaving anybody out? And Ezra and John? Yeah, that's...
Mm-hmm. Do you mind giving us a preview of what we can hear?
I'd love to. I got to go to a wedding of my nephew recently who, like a lot of people, is waiting till later in life to get married. He's about 32. And he paid me a pretty good compliment. He said, Uncle Pat, you've been married about as long as anybody in our extended family. And I was wondering if you could give me some advice on how to do it. So I promised him I would write him a song that contained that. So this is that advice. Gather round while I tell you about the secret of life, at least the secret to keeping a wife. There's some things you're gonna have to decide, like would you rather be happy or would you rather be right? You can lose the war while winning a fight. Here's the secret to keeping a wife. Yes, dear, that's what I say. We don't have to do it all my way. Wish I thought of that myself. You're so bright, we should put you up on a shelf. You're right, I'm wrong, and that's the name of this song. Yes, dear, she said, hey, baby, let's go for a walk on the beach. I said, can't we just sit here and watch TV? She says, cut all that excess fat off your meat. I said, sugar, let me eat the way I want to eat. She said, I think I feel a headache coming on. I said, what was the name of that song? Yes, dear, that's what I say. We don't have to do it all my way. Wish I thought of that myself. You're so bright, we should put you up on a shelf. You're right, I'm wrong, and that's the name of this song. Mm-hmm. get a hobby like music or golf. One that takes your whole day off on Saturday. Stay out of the house if you want to keep a happy, happy, happy spouse. On Sunday, do her list and finish with a little kiss and this. Yes, dear, that's what I say. We don't have to do it all my way. Wish I'd thought of that myself. You're so bright, we should put you up on a shelf. You're right, I'm wrong, and that's the name of this song. Yes, dear, you're right, dear. Wish I'd thought of that myself, dear.
Did you play that at the wedding?
No, I didn't finish it until he asked me that the day before the wedding, so I didn't finish that. I might need to get a copy of that so I can send it to him.
Okay. Tuesday night, July 3rd, Clap
Tuesday
Auditorium.
Night, July 3rd. I promise it will be fun. We're having the Greenhouse Grill is providing dinner, and Rick's Bakery is providing dessert. Jam and Java is providing coffee, and it goes to $5 contribution that they're asking for goes to restoring Clap Auditorium into a beautiful premier 400-seat auditorium for this area, which can be used by everybody for all kinds of things.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Sunday, the 1st of July, 2012. It's the birthday of novelist Gene Stafford, born Covina, California, 1915, author of numerous novels, including The Mountain Lion, and also Collected Stories of Gene Stafford, which won the Pulitzer Prize when it came out in 1969. She died 10 years later and left her entire estate to her cleaning woman. It's the birthday of the man who told you to omit needless words. Omit needless words. William Strunk Jr., born Cincinnati, 1869, taught English at Cornell, where he published his little book, The Elements of Style. One of his students was E.B. White, who revised and expanded Strunk's book. It has sold millions of copies. And it's the birthday of the French novelist George Sand, born Lucille Aurore Dupin in Paris, 1804. She was raised by her grandmother, sent off to a convent to be educated, wanted to become a nun, then went to Paris, lived with her mother, got married, had two children. Her husband drank too much, was unfaithful. The marriage deteriorated. Lucille fell in love with other men, including the novelist Jules Sandeau. And while they were together, they co-wrote a novel, which was published under Sandeau's pseudonym, J. Sand. The publisher asked for another book. Lucille had written one, and she published it under the name George Sand. It was the novel Indiana. It was a big success. George Sand wrote more than 90 novels, 35 plays, a multi-volume autobiography, was one of the most famous women of her time, famous for wearing men's clothing, smoking cigars, and for her long string of lovers, which included Frédéric Chopin. She was friends with Turgenev and Flaubert, Zola, Balzac. George Sand, who said, "The world will know and understand me someday, but if that day does not arrive, it does not greatly matter. I shall have opened the way for other women." Here's a poem for today by George Bilgear, entitled Tamed. This summer, my nephew is old enough for his first job mowing the lawn. I watch him lean his skinny chest to the bar of the push mower, put his weight into it, and become, for the first time, a beast in harness, a laborer on the face of the earth, somehow withering and expanding at the same time into something worn and ancient, but still a kid withal. And I remember how bitterly I went into the traces, hating that Saturday ritual for a while, then growing inexplicably into it, gradually mastering the topography of the yard, sometimes using the back and forth technique, sometimes going for the checkerboard effect, or my favorite, the ever-diminishing square that left at the lawn's center one last uncut stand of grass, a wild fortress I annihilated with a strange thrill, then stood back to take a look, to survey the field, to cast a critical eye on my work, just as this kid is doing, standing at the edge of the mowed clearance, taking his own measure and liking it. Tamed, a poem by George Bilgear, from The Good Kiss, published by University of Akron Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, the oldest monthly devoted to verse in the English-speaking world. You can join its centennial celebration and become a subscriber at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Joy Biles, edited by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Ozarks at Large on KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers.
Goshen.
Very good. Very good. It's a Sunday. Some things are happening throughout the area. The Blue Moon Cat Shelter, that's a no-kill shelter, is holding a three-day adoption marathon that ends today at the Fayetteville Petco stores across from the mall. The Blue Moon Cat Shelter will be there each day, including today, until 7 p.m. All cats and kittens will be available for same-day adoption. If you'd like more information, 677-3021.
And this afternoon, you can join singing cowboy Marshall Mitchell for a free family concert. It's at Ozark Folkways from 2 until 4. Refreshments will be served. Mitchell's performance is part of First Sundays at Ozark Folkways, a monthly celebration of Ozark art and music. For more information, call 479-634-3791.
Marshall Mitchell is still the only person I know who has written a song about a riparian buffer system.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a cool, if possible, Sunday.
Happy Sunday.